Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas, Dr. Michael Greger. Michael, thanks for being with us.
So excited to be here. Can't wait to come to El Paso.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it.
Yeah, Michael, we really are, and we have already have a sold-out dinner for that night. And so why don't we start out by having you tell our listeners a little bit about how you got into vegan nutrition?
Oh, you know, it's actually my grandma. I was just a kid when the doctor sent my grandma home in a wheelchair to die. She was diagnosed with end-stage heart disease, already had so many bypass operations, basically run out of plumbing at some point. Confined a wheelchair, crushing chest pain. Doctors told her nothing else they could do. Her life was over age 65. And then she heard about this guy, Nathan Pritikin, this early lifestyle medicine pioneer, became one of his early success stories. He's actually even featured in Pritikin's biography. It talks about Frances Greger. That was my grandma. It was this kind of live-in program, put you on a plant-based diet. They wheeled her in, and she walked out. Within a few weeks, she was walking 10 miles a day, went on to live another 31 years until age 96 to continue to enjoy her six grandkids.
Wow.
And so her miraculous recovery not only inspired one of those grandkids to pursue a career in medicine, but, you know, granted her enough healthy years to see him graduate from medical school. So everything I do is really all thanks to her.
Well, you know, as I remember reading in your book, you didn't instantly change your diet to a healthy lifestyle when that happened, right?
No. I mean, for me, I mean, it didn't even strike me as anything out of the ordinary. I mean, that's what doctors do. You go to the doctor, you get better. Like they, you know, lay their hands on you and you jump out of the wheelchair. That's what, you know. Only later did I realize what a revolutionary act that was. At the time, we didn't even think heart disease was reversible at all. So it wasn't until Dr. Dean Ornish in July 1990 in his Lifestyle Heart Trial, published in the most prestigious medical journal on the planet, showed there in black and white with something called quantitative angiography, actually be able to show pictures of the arteries opening up without drugs, without surgery, just with, you know, a healthy plant-based diet and other lifestyle changes. My family had already experienced it, but there it was for all the world to see. That's what really did it for me. That's when I changed my diet. Just assumed that that was going to be the game changer. But when I got to medical school, I was shocked to find out that this whole body of evidence on reversing chronic disease with lifestyle changes was being largely ignored by mainstream medicine. And so if the cure to our number one killer, heart disease, could get lost down the rabbit hole, what else might be buried in the medical literature that could help my patients? You know, I made it my life's mission to find out. That's what led me to start NutritionFacts.org, and that's what led me to write the book, How Not to Die.
Your book, as well as everything leading up to your book, NutritionFacts.org, et cetera, has made me very skeptical about the medical profession. I'd rather not go to a doctor or take prescription medicines. I'd rather try to prevent those things from happening.
You know, absolutely. The reason that people continue to rely on pills and procedures is because they wildly overestimate the efficacy. So people think, for example, statin drugs, these cholesterol-lowering drugs, are 20 times more effective than they actually are in preventing heart attacks. People overestimate the power of colon cancer screening or cancer screening in general, the ability of drugs like Fosamax to prevent hip fractures, or the drugs like blood pressure medications to reduce one's risk of a stroke, on down the list. It's not that these drugs don't help at all, but the cause of these diseases is not medication deficiencies. The cause of these diseases are these are lifestyle diseases. And until we actually treat the cause, treat the reason why we have these diseases in the first place, we're not going to reverse these diseases. And so, sure, with, for example, type 2 diabetes, with, you know, pills and injections, we can slow down your diabetes. We can slow down your vision loss and your kidney function loss and your, you know, amputations. But if you want to reverse your diabetes, if you actually want to get better, then you actually need to treat the cause and improve your lifestyle. And the good news is that we have tremendous power over our health, destiny, and longevity. The vast majority of premature death and disability is preventable with a plant-based diet and other healthy lifestyle behaviors.
Well, Michael, another thing that people forget is many of these medications, not only do they just slow the progression of the disease, but they also have tremendous numbers of side effects.
And not only lots of side effects, but, I mean, potentially deadly side effects. 106,000
yeah.
Americans are killed every year by prescription drugs prescribed in hospitals, perhaps another 190,000 due to drugs prescribed in an ambulatory setting, meaning, like, you know, at your doctor's office. hundreds of thousands of people are killed. I mean, in fact, so if you do the numbers, you know, health care is the third leading cause of death in the United States. And so, I mean, the solution is not to avoid going to see your doctor. The solution is to eat and live healthy enough such that you never are stricken by these diseases, so you don't have to take these risky tests and treatments.
One thing that sort of bothers me a little bit is the feeling that I have to eat curry every day and three or four servings of fruit and beans and nuts and seeds. And I think, you know, I have to overeat to obtain maximum health.
You shouldn't have to overeat, but, I mean, there really isn't much room for junk, I'll give you that. I mean, if you really want to follow my kind of daily dozen checklist of all the things you try to fit into a daily routine, ideally, then, yeah, there's really not a lot of room. I mean, it's not like you can, go out and eat a steak and then have room to fit in all this other stuff. But that's part of the strategy, is to basically displace less healthy options by packing your diet with some of the healthiest foods.
Right.
Well, tell us about your 12 healthiest foods that you describe in your book, How Not to Die.
Yeah, well, so the book, so the first part of the book is just, 15 chapters on each of the 15 leading causes of death, talking about the role diet can play in preventing, arresting, and reversing each of our 15 killers. But, you know, I didn't want it to just be a reference book, with, like, all the most compelling evidence, got about 3,000 citations. I really wanted to be a practical guide translating this mountain of data into day-to-day decisions. And so that's what really became the second half of the book, where, you know, I center my recommendations around this daily dozen checklist of all the things I try to fit into my daily routine. And so it was a quarter teaspoon of turmeric, one tablespoon of ground flax seeds, talk about greens, you know, cruciferous vegetables, berries, you know, what's the healthiest beverages, how much exercise, what's the healthiest sweeteners. I just kind of go through the list in hopes that it'll kind of motivate people to clean up their diet. Now there's an app. There's free apps on both iPhone and Android that you can download called Dr. Greger's Daily Dozen that, again, can just help you kind of inspire folks, hopefully, to eat healthier.
You know, you mentioned supplements a couple of times, several times in the book, and how they don't really work as well as whole food plants. But you do recommend three, which are B12, omega-3, and vitamin D. But what I'm wondering is, can I get the vitamin D I need from mushrooms?
Well, I mean, you can get the if you live in El Paso, you can get the vitamin D the way nature intended,
yeah,
through the sun, right? So, I mean, vitamin D is really a misnomer. It's not a vitamin. It's a hormone that your skin creates when it's exposed to sunlight. And so living at your latitude with skin that's as white as yours, you should be able to, 10 to 15 minutes of midday sun between like 10 and 2 on just forearms and face. Even if you're completely covered up otherwise, you should get all the vitamin D you need.
Just driving around with my arm out the window.
Just driving with your arm out the window. No, seriously. Now, that is not the case, however. So before I make it down to El Paso, I got about 28 days on the road. My first stop is Minneapolis. Now, up in Minnesota, that's a different story. I mean, during the winter months, it doesn't matter how long you sunbathe naked out on the out on the ski slopes up there. You're just not going to make enough vitamin D because the sun's rays are at such an angle at that latitude. So for them, they really do need to take vitamin D. I encourage them to take 2,000 international units of vitamin D a day. You could do it for mushrooms, but that would be a tremendous amount of mushrooms. I think it would be easier just to take a pill.
And what about the other two that you recommend, vitamin B12 and the omega fatty acids?
So vitamin B12 is also not made by plants. It's not made by animals either. It's made by little microbes that blanket the earth. So, you know, we should have been able to get all the B12 we need drinking out of a mountain stream or well water. But now we chlorinate our water supply to kill off any bacteria. So you don't get a lot of vitamin B12 in our water anymore. Don't get a lot of cholera either. That's a good thing. But because of the way we live in our sanitized world, we need to get a regular, reliable source somewhere. Now, you know, our fellow great apes get it eating bugs, dirt, and feces, but I prefer either fortified foods or supplements, so I recommend a 2,500 microgram tablet once a week, costs less than $5 a year. You have all the B12 you need.
There's something about probiotics I'd like to discuss with you. I've recently heard that gut bacteria make decisions about food for us. If you have the bad gut bacteria that results from a fast food diet, it continues because those bad bacteria are making your food decisions. Is there any merit to that theory?
There is evidence that our gut bacteria can change through what's called the gut-brain axis, can actually change our psychological states. And, you know, we know this from what are called fecal transplants, where you, if you take bacteria, gut bacteria from a happy person, and you take that and put them into the gut of a depressed person, you actually improve their mood just because of the different. We won't go into the messy details as to how exactly you transplant that, but
yeah, thank you.
But it's kind of a very interesting phenomenon. However, what you're talking about, this kind of food preference thing, that's all just been done on laboratory animals, non-human animals.
Yeah.
And so you know, with certain gut bacteria, the mice will eat certain kind of food, and then you switch them, they'll eat different kind of food. We don't know if that actually translates into human beings.
You know, now I'm thinking perhaps I can make a little money as a feces donor since I'm.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. No, you get someone eating a good plant based diet, man. That, you got gold in there.
Well, not to change the subject, but let's talk about some ways that you can get some of those nutrients packed into you. And like you said, you have your 12 favorite. Items that we should incorporate into our diet. Which one do you think, if you could only get six of them, you know, which
probably the healthiest thing on the planet is dark green leafy vegetables. Just like berries are the healthiest fruits, greens are the healthiest vegetables. In fact, the healthiest foods, period, with the highest nutrient density than any other food, and translating to about a 20% drop in heart attack and stroke risk for each daily serving, adding not only years to your life, but life to your years, because the nitrates in greens can both boost athletic performance and blood flow for what one might call a veggie Viagra effect. And so greens are good for us.
And one of them wouldn't be Ben and Jerry's new vegan ice cream, right?
None of them have. Unless they come out with the fifth flavor, including kale, unfortunately, no.
You know, there's been some news a few months ago that cholesterol wasn't really bad. It was saturated fat. Was that research conducted by the egg industry?
Oh, well, certainly not mutually exclusive. Both cholesterol and saturated fat can both increase your blood cholesterol. There are a number of misleading studies funded by the American Egg Board, and which I have videos about on the site. But to the egg industry's chagrin, when the new dietary guidelines came out this year, it reiterated the Institute of Medicine's recommendation to reduce cholesterol as much as possible. The only way you could really reduce cholesterol as much as possible is eat a strictly plant-based diet, as meat, eggs, and dairy are the only places that cholesterol is found naturally.
Yeah, so it makes sense that reducing your intake of those would really benefit people that are suffering from these diseases, but oftentimes you talk to people about this and they say, oh, well, I'd rather just take a pill if I don't want to give up my bacon.
Yes, but see, what they don't really, it's not a question of, oh, should I take a pill to reduce a heart attack or should I eat healthy to reduce a heart attack? Because in about 97.5% of cases, the pill doesn't do anything for you short term. And so we're talking even what's called secondary prevention, meaning you've already had a heart attack, trying to prevent your second heart attack, so you're at super high risk. You give them these cholesterol-lowering statin drugs, and it only helps about 3% of people over a three-year period, whereas something like a plant-based diet, you know, in Dr. Esselstyn's case series, he found that 98.6% of people that went on a plant-based diet had no further events. And these were kind of the worst of the worst people, whereas a significant percentage of people that went off his diet and started eating, reverting to their regular dietary pattern, then went on to die or suffer from cardiac events like heart attacks.
Have you noticed any difference in the medical profession, like other of your physician colleagues? Are they starting to change their tune and to prescribe proactive dietary changes instead of just having people rely on these pills?
There's been a tremendous sea change. I mean, there's really exciting things happening in medicine. There's a whole new field of medicine right now called lifestyle medicine. So El Paso is going to be part of this kind of 28-day speaking tour which starts tomorrow for me. And actually, most places I'm speaking are like hospitals doing grand rounds for other physicians. And because there's just this desperate need out there, people are really interested. Now, part of that is financial. You know, you have these big institutions, these managed care organizations like Kaiser Permanente, these health insurers, which it's in their best, it's in their bottom line best interest to keep people healthy. But also, you know, there's big corporations that self-insure their employees. And so if you can prevent a few cases of diabetes, you just really did a big thing for the stockholders. And so part of that, the interest in plant-based eating, now that the evidence is so strong that we can prevent and reverse disease, you know, those big kind of big business entities are jumping on board. And I think that'll just help kind of move the needle and facilitate this the grassroots momentum that's already surging thanks to great books like The China Study, documentaries like The Forks Over Knives. There's just this tremendous interest now in healthy eating as our society gets sicker and sicker. As diabetes rates continue to increase, you know, people are desperately looking out there for answers, and we have had the science on our side for decades, and finally people are paying attention.
Michael, I've been a longtime follower of nutritionfacts.org. A lot of the information in the book was a little bit familiar to me, but there was one thing that was totally new, which was secondhand fumes. If you're around frying meat, then the fumes can actually cause damage.
Yeah, so I mean, well, there was this question: why do restaurant cooks, for example, have such high rates of lung cancer, and why do vegetarians have such low rates of lung cancer? Okay, colon cancer, you understand, right?
Yeah.
But why would someone eating plant-based have less lung cancer? So when they looked at it, they found there's these things called polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons. These are compounds created when you basically fry meat or eggs, actually. And so now there's recommendations that if you are going to, you know, fry, you know, bacon and eggs, you should do it outside. You should not do it in an enclosed space because these fumes can increase the risk for your family. You know, I mean, so there's this kind of, you heard of secondhand smoke. Well, even if you're in, even if you live in a house, so this was a study done on pregnant women. So even pregnant women who are cooking these foods, right, who are frying bacon, but even if they weren't eating it themselves, they still suffered higher risk of fetal abnormalities just because they were kind of in the same room as these compounds.
Wow. Well, this poses a huge danger for all the teenagers working at fast food restaurants.
That's a real issue. And that's how, actually, we've made such progress on the tobacco industry. On the tobacco issues, because, you know, you had all these bartenders and stuff who were saying, look, I don't want to die just because I, you know, work at this place. I shouldn't be put, my health shouldn't be put at risk. And so that's how we were able to get these great non-smoking laws, which really dropped smoking rates. And so maybe if more of this evidence develops, we'll also be helping some chefs back there and forcing these places to have no meat zones as well.
That will be quite a quite an accomplishment, man. We have just a few minutes left here, so do you want to tell us your favorite fact from your book?
Oh wow, there's just so many. Well, I mean, look, I mean the bottom line is that we have tremendous power over our health, destiny, and longevity. The vast majority of premature death and disability is preventable with a plant-based diet. I mean, I just can't say that over and over. I mean, that's really what it, I mean, so that's a hopeful message. I mean, there's this tremendous optimism. We have the power. We just have to exercise it.
We've been talking with Dr. Michael Greger, author of the new book, How Not to Die. We really appreciate you being with us, Michael, and we look forward to seeing you in El Paso very shortly here.
I can't wait.